this evening, as we continue our It Also Takes Church study, I will tell you that I have relied much more this evening and this week on an essay written by Margaret Aletta Guider than usual, but in reading that essay and doing some other research, what she has to say is, and what she has to say is very, I think, very timely, and I couldn't improve a whole lot on a whole lot of it. So tonight we're looking at the shadow of the manger and looking at children and the potential and possibilities of the suffering that children face, and looking at it in part from the perspective of what Jesus has to say, but also the fact that God chooses to come in a baby. And while we often think of that in very idyllic kinds of terms, the baby Jesus and the child Jesus probably didn't have it quite as easy as we often picture. When you think about the Christmas story, most of the time, what are the images that we see or the images that come to mind about that story? Stable, the nice picture with Mary holding the baby Jesus. You've got angels, you've got shepherds. Most of us put the wise guys there the same night because we don't want to come back later and have to finish the story. Those kinds of things. Occasionally somebody will talk about Herod's plot to kill Jesus, but he escapes just in the nick of time. Those kinds of things. In fact, I had somebody one time, I was talking in a class and talking about that with students and how some of the legends about the soldiers pursuing and actually some of the evergreen trees being blessed because Mary and Joseph, the baby Jesus, on their way to Egypt to escape were being pursued by the soldiers of Herod, and the only place they could find was a grove of trees, but the trees had lost their leaves at the time, and the only way that they could, but they were trying to at least get out of the road, and when they got back there, that God caused the trees to sprout green, and the reason they were evergreen is because they hid the Holy Family, you know, how those legends go and all those kinds of things. Well, you're talking about different things and talking about some of those legends along with the story. And I had a student, a ministerial student, who said, oh, well, there wasn't anything to worry about anyway. God wasn't going to let anything happen to him. They really didn't have to be worried. And I thought, well, that may very well be the case, but, you know, about God's protection, but you're talking about parents and with this baby, and they're being pursued by soldiers that are killing other babies, and what must those parents be thinking? Well, that's my point. Yeah, they have to help themselves because they don't know what God's going to do in that instance. Well, and so we can relate to those parents with our own situations with children and those kinds of things. But Guider writes, "What is the significance of God choosing and becoming human to take on the fragility of infancy and the vulnerability of childhood?" You know, we don't often think of it like that. You know, baby Jesus, Son of God, all this kind of stuff. But really think about God chooses to come not... he didn't, and I have some handwritten notes here later, but, you know, he didn't choose to come as he could have, just all of a sudden, beam me down, Scotty, and he's a 30-something-year-old man that looks like human and has all this tremendous strength, and then go about his mission. God chooses to come in a fragile life, the life of a baby, to grow up through childhood into adulthood and to experience for us all of those things that we potentially face and that children in our world face regardless of the time period. And so she said, what is the significance of that? And really, if you think about it, God loves us enough to have come not just to die as a man. He could have showed up at 30 years old and gone on. But God chose to come in the fragility of a child. It does set an example. Including children. Yeah, including children. I've often wondered, I don't know, if, of course, Joseph had had a lot of wood around. I've often wondered if he might have had to at least pick up the hickory and say, now listen, your mama said and you didn't do it right then. But we don't know. But when we prayerfully reflect on the suffering of the Christ child, with the same seriousness as that of the Christ man, we'll recognize and serve the needs of children entrusted to our care. The suffering of the Christ child, well, we've already mentioned that he really wasn't that aware of it, but depending on how old he was, he might have felt some fear that all of a sudden his mom and dad had picked him up and taken off. He's at least 40 days old when the Magi arrive, and he might have been up to 2 years, depending on everything with the text and all that kind of thing. But I'm sure, and especially if he's 2 years old, he's kind of wonders, why are we picking up and running? That kind of thing. But also, the suffering of the Christ child, I don't have any illusions, and I may be proven wrong and okay, but I don't have any illusions that if Jesus was running along and tripped and fell on the ground, he didn't skin his knee and experience that pain and suffering. That he didn't have things that didn't necessarily go his way as a child, and I don't know if he pitched a temper tantrum or not, but he probably got sad over some things. Robert Kuschwitz writes, one key motivation that Christians have for caring for the suffering and vulnerability of others, even when they're strangers, to say about the one who is in distress, this is someone for whom Christ suffered and died. And he said, that's a way we can relate to folks and be motivated for caring for them. Or we might say, in the person suffering, I can recognize again the suffering of Jesus. He said, seeing our Savior's suffering exhibited through other people's distress, though, is not our only motivation to help them. But what a powerful connection it is that will bind us one to another. And not just thinking about the suffering of adults, but the suffering of children specifically. We see those, and of course people get cynical. Of course, I hadn't seen her in a few years now. I don't even know if Sally Struthers still around. But you used to see the faces of the children, and Sally Struthers' voice would come on, and then Sally Struthers would be there wanting you to give money for this child in Africa or this child here. And those things tug at your heart when you see children suffering like that. If you look at some of the documentaries of folks in other countries, particularly in Africa, and the young children not even be able to swallow because they're so weak. That kind of suffering pulls at your heart, but it's also a way that binds our spirits, not only with those folks, but binds our spirits with God in Christ, especially if we think, Joseph wasn't rich. Mary didn't work outside the home. What if there were times that they struggled and wondered about food, about other things? So really, some of the questions here. Why do I help others who are suffering? Or why do you help somebody else that's vulnerable? Some of the suggestions are, we experience a connection with them, right? Maybe someone, we've been there. We've had something similar happen to us. We're vulnerable. We suffered. And somebody's in that same situation, and we empathize with them and reach out to them. How many of us know that when we see a family member or a close friend who is suffering, we reach out to them? Why? Because we love them. And we've had that personal connection. That's right. We have that person, and we love them. So that's another reason that sometimes we reach out to folks. Sometimes we reach out and we get all upset when we find out that our fellow citizens are stranded on foreign soil, especially soldiers, but others. We get our sense of patriotism can sometimes cause us to help in various ways. Or if we can't help them, we seek to help their families. Some people will help because disaster strikes. We've seen disaster. We've been touched by disaster. Our family's been touched by disaster. And when a disaster strikes, it's that common bond of humanity. Floods, earthquakes, Hurricane Sandy, disasters, because some of us have experienced those in our lives, and some folks have lost things. Some have had families who have lost things in disasters, and so there's that sense that it could happen to me, and I sure hope somebody would help me. But we reach out to help because we see the suffering of fellow human beings, something that they may not have brought on themselves, unless they're the ones that built the house that's standing on stilts on Hunting Island, and the high tide comes three-fourths of the way under the house. I've seen that a few times, I'm thinking. Okay. That's your own fault if that one falls in. I mean, we're not talking about concrete pylons either. We're talking about pine trees or cedar trees or the poles. That's what's holding the house up, and the water comes two-thirds of the way under it every time the tide comes up. No, they're not. Well, and that's true. No, experience doesn't always do that. You're right, William. In fact, that's kind of where we're going with E and F here. 1 Corinthians 12:26, when we read there, if one member, talking about the body, if one member suffers, all suffer together with it. If one member is honored, all rejoice together with it. Members of the body of Christ, we suffer and we rejoice with each other because we are together as family, members of the body of Christ. But then again, what about those folks like William just mentioned? Well, Jesus talked about that. I just keep dropping all kinds of papers. Jesus talked about that in Matthew chapter 25, and actually that's the parable of the final judgment. But in specifically in 25 verses 37 through 40, where Jesus says, then the righteous will answer the Lord, Lord, when was it that we saw you hungry and we gave you food? Or thirsty and gave you something to drink? And when was it that we saw you a stranger and welcomed you? Or naked and gave you clothing? And when was it that we saw you sick or in prison and visited you? And the king will answer them, truly I tell you, just as you did it to one of the least of these, my brethren, or my translation here, who are members of my family, you did it to me. When you did it to the least. And that's what you were saying a few moments ago, William. A lot of those don't fit in, but because of that grace and that love that God gives to us, then sometimes we do that. So there are all kinds of reasons, and we may have other reasons why we help someone who we see is suffering, who is vulnerable. Right after World War II, English writer Carol Houselander wrote a book entitled The Passion of the Infant Christ. It was popular in England, wasn't so popular over here. But she said, Bethlehem is the endscape of Calvary. The passion of the man Christ on Calvary is at once revealed and hidden in the infant Christ in Bethlehem. In other words, what was going to happen on Calvary was revealed in the infant, but then hidden once again until that happened. That is, Jesus had to go through, among other things, Jesus had to go through living that life as an infant, as a child, growing up and growing as a man, to get to that other end. And so she contended that really, if we're going to understand the good news of the crucified Christ, in the shadow of the cross, we have to also think about how God endured suffering and danger and vulnerability as an infant and as a child, growing to become that man on the cross. And that actually, she called it, and Guider concurs here, you've got the shadow of the cross. And that's how we typically look at redemption, do we not? In the story of Jesus, we emphasize so much the shadow of the cross. But she says that before that shadow of the cross has its full meaning, we have to understand the shadow of the manger as well. That God chose to come in that form and to be vulnerable, even as a child, for that to happen. In the time of King Herod, after Jesus was born in Bethlehem of Judea, wise men from the east came to Jerusalem asking, "Where is the king, the child who has been born king of the Jews?" And that piqued Herod's interest, didn't it? King of the Jews. "For we have observed his star at its rising and have come to pay him homage." When King Herod heard this, he was frightened, and all Jerusalem with him. And calling together all the chief priests and scribes of the people, he inquired of them where the Messiah was to be born. And they told him, "In Bethlehem of Judea. For so it has been written by the prophet, 'And you, O Bethlehem, in the land of Judah, are by no means least among the rulers of Judah. For from you shall come a ruler who is to shepherd my people.' Then Herod secretly called for the wise men and learned from them the exact time when the star had appeared, and sent them to Bethlehem, saying, 'Go and search diligently for the child. When you have found him, bring me word so that I may also go and pay him homage.'" Dropping down to verses 12 and following. "And having been warned in a dream not to return to Herod, they left for their own country by another road. Now after they had left, an angel of the Lord appeared to Joseph in a dream and said, 'Get up, take the child and his mother and flee to Egypt, and remain there until I tell you, for Herod is about to search for the child to destroy him.' Then Joseph got up, took the child and his mother by night, and went to Egypt." Interesting. The children of Israel are rescued and leave from death and danger and leave Egypt to come to the land of Canaan. When? In the middle of the night. Jesus and his family leave to go to Egypt to escape the destruction and death in the middle of the night. Parallels about redemption and rescue from exile. "And remained there until the death of Herod. This was to fulfill what had been spoken by the Lord through the prophet, 'Out of Egypt have I called my son.' When Herod saw that he had been tricked by the wise men, he was infuriated and sent and killed all the children in and around Bethlehem who were 2 years old or under, according to the time that he had learned from the wise men. Then was fulfilled what had been spoken through the prophet Jeremiah. A voice was heard in Ramah, wailing and loud lamentation, Rachel weeping for her children. She refused to be consoled because they are no more." And then we're told that Herod dies. The angel says, "Get up, go and take the child back because the king is dead." And you think, okay, it's over. They get to go back and be nice and happy little family, right? "Then Joseph got up and took the child and his mother and went to the land of Israel. But when he heard that Archelaus was ruling over Judea in place of his father Herod, he was afraid to go there." Even when they came back, there's fear. Why? Because Archelaus, one of the sons of Herod, would also, if he heard of this child, have looked for him to destroy him. And so the parents suffer as well here. "After being warned in a dream, he went away to the district of Galilee." We focus on the good news of Jesus on the cross. But the good news isn't just found on the cross. The good news starts when God comes and is vulnerable in a baby. And through childhood. In a time when, quite frankly, and you know, we can debate if we want to all kinds of things about God's protective hand, but in a time when, quite frankly, children didn't always make it into adulthood. There were all kinds of things that kept them from doing so. And I would be very surprised if we could talk to Mary and Joseph. I'd be very surprised if they went through Jesus' infancy and childhood up to adulthood and never worried about what was going on with him. what might happen to him when he left to go when he left home to go out to study with the other boys at the feet of the rabbi to learn to read Hebrew and all of that. Yeah. And what if they might not have worried about somebody snatching him, but what about an ox cart going wild or an ox deciding to break loose and run over him? Or something else happened. So God came in fragility and dependence of the human condition. And as we reflect on the suffering of Christ and the Christ child and the things that he went through, it just might help us to see and hear the plight of children in our world. Children in our world. Children who didn't ask to be born into certain situations. Children who come, and far too often these days, their innocence is taken at a young age in various ways, through suffering, through abuse, through deaths, and other things. And God came and allowed himself to experience life with those dangers so that he understands children. And remember, Jesus used to talk about children regularly. But I think also as a challenge to us to try and understand that God does understand that, but we too need to work that much harder to protect children. I mean, we work real hard to protect our own, don't we? But what about others? He comes as the living Christ unborn, growing inside of his mother and experiencing childbirth. I don't remember what it was like. I don't remember if it was traumatic or not. I was told I got whooped within the first 30 seconds after I was... You know. Yeah. Well, I used to joke around sometimes. Said, "Yeah, the reason I got whooped is because first thing I did was pinch the nurse." But I don't remember that either. So. My mother says I rode a tricycle down a whole flight of stairs outside from the upstairs apartment. When I got to the bottom, she heard all this crash. She looked out, and I just said, I sat up and I said, "Mommy, I fall down." I was about 2.5, 3 years old, and then I grabbed the trike and tried to go back up the steps with it. So sometimes, see, that's that hard head. It doesn't always learn the first time. Well, I used to joke with a friend of mine and say, you know, that they weren't sure which end of him to slap, so they hit them both. But you know, the living Christ, unborn, going through all of that experience, growing inside of his mother, that experience for her, because she now has to care for a child. This baby grows inside of her, and she has to care for that baby. And this is the first one. She hadn't had a baby before. She didn't know whether you're supposed to lay him face down or on his back. Get that straw away from the sides of the manger in case he doesn't roll up against that bumper pad. You know, I'm really surprised our children even lived through childhood, because our boys laid on their bellies and we had those bumper pads inside the crib, and now they say, "Oh, don't put them on the belly, they got to lay on the back. Oh, don't you put those bumper pads, it might roll up against them and suffocate." So I figure in another 5 or 10 years they'll be saying, "Now put them on the bellies and make sure you got these bumper pads around." Head sick up, yeah. And you go along with a little water and can of milk and just tip it over. He also comes and grows as the infant Christ in need of affection, in need of protection. Babies need not just protection, but if babies are going to develop, they need affection, do they not? the same needs of affection and protection as any infant that's born today. And some are born even more vulnerable than others and need extra care and extra attention. I don't understand how I wouldn't have a problem being in the surgical room. In fact, when I had knee surgery in the seventh grade, I tried to get the doctor to let me watch, but he wouldn't. And I talked to the doctor about my shoulder. I wanted him to, when he replaced it, I wanted Dr. Jernigan to at least film it, but they didn't have capability because I wanted to watch it. He was a little surprised. He said, "You know, I can always do it and not put you to sleep. I can just do the shoulder block, but you don't want to hear what's going on next to your head when I do." You know, I can do all those kinds of things. But I have a great respect for medical folks and greater respect for nurses than most doctors. But among the greatest respect that I have for anyone in the medical profession are the nurses that work in the NICU, the neonatal ICU. Day in, day out, and sometimes it doesn't end well. But they give that extra affection that is needed. That extra protection that is needed. Christ's child was impressionable. And he's also growing up in a dangerous world, was he not? I mean, he was impressionable. Like all children. He went off to school. Impressionable. He hung out with other little boys. And their families might not have treated them the same way. Might not have taught them the same things that he was learning. And children are very impressionable. Once they head off to school, they start slipping away. If you're not careful, right? And think about, well, it could be a scary thought, I guess, too. For most of our children, it's unfortunate sometimes that parents aren't more attentive, but for many of our children in the world today, the teacher has more time than the parents do. Awake time. It's very impressionable. All the more important importance placed on good teachers and good teaching. Very impressionable. Dangerous world? We don't live in a dangerous world, do we? Unfortunately, we see that far too much, that dangerous world. But God chose to come in that form and in that way to experience life from growing in Mary's womb all the way through adulthood. As one writer said, Jesus, the second person of the Trinity, didn't materialize in human form at 30, but chose the way of incarnation as a child. In becoming human, God chose to be conceived by and born of a woman. God's choice to share in the passion of human infancy was a choice to undergo the sufferings that are part of every person being human. The infant did not make disciples, but called from humans the goodness in and for which they were created. End quote. And I would add, and to remind us that part of our call to God's mission is to be attentive to the needs of other humans, especially children. Especially children who live in shadows a lot of times. The shadows of birth, the shadows of infancy, shadows that are out there that surround their childhood. They grow up way too fast. Because, see, children are not only who they will become, but who they are now, just as much as adults. And it's all that much more important that we don't overlook them for who they are now. Because who they are now, if we as caring Christians, whether we're parents, grandparents, teachers, or friends, or we just have that sense within us, it's part of God's mission, God's call to us to care for them. If we don't really care for who they are now as much as who they will become, they very well may become what we don't want to see them be. the shadow of the manger means also other different things. And this Hauslander and Guider, these are reflections or meditations on the cross, the manger, and children. And actually, in the essay from which I took a fair amount of this, if we had about an additional 45 minutes, because that's about what is suggested, but we don't, we would do centered and guided prayer on these issues. But I would challenge you to take this second, even if you don't take anything else out of here that's been said, that's been shared, you wad up page one and throw it away. Please hang on to page two and at some point reflect and meditate off in the future. Maybe not just once, but at different points in time. Reflections or meditations on the cross, the manger, and children. On the cross, consider Christ, his life threatened, approaching the hour of his passion, riding into Jerusalem, a holy city, on the back of a donkey. And we do. We think about that with Easter coming up, with Lent starting very soon. We'll reflect on those kinds of things and think about it. But also consider from the side of the manger, the unborn infant in Mary's womb, approaching the hour of his birth, being carried on the back of a donkey to another holy city, Bethlehem. And just as Jesus is, his life is threatened as he is approaching the hour of his passion, riding into Jerusalem, so the unborn infant is also riding toward Bethlehem. And the hope and the prayer, and we know with hindsight that it didn't happen, but what if it's a difficult birth? In the same manner, consider the unborn and at-risk children of our world and what they have to face. And how can we as Christians help those at-risk children in our world? Also from the cross, consider Christ on Calvary, sleeping his last sleep in Mary's arms. And though they didn't say it immediately when I read that, I thought of the statue of the Pietà, which means pity. I don't know if you've ever seen that statue or not, marble statue where Mary, the mother of Jesus, is holding Jesus, who has just been taken from the cross, in her arms. Consider the newborn infant in Bethlehem sleeping his first sleep in Mary's arms. Love on the one hand for the child in her arms. Love and sorrow on the other hand for the grown child in her arms. And then think about children, those who are both alive and those who are lifeless in the world, who would be held in their mother's arms in need of affection and security in both the joy of birth and the sorrow of those who have died. What about names, identity, belonging? Christ as King of the Jews, a name that cost him his life, did it not? That was one of the charges, and that's what was hung over the cross. The infant in the manger whose name Jesus identified him as King of the Jews, a name that we just read a few moments ago in Matthew 2, threatened his very life as a baby. Threatened his life because Jesus, the Magi came and said, "We're looking for the one that has been born King of the Jews." And then consider the importance of name giving, that is, a sense of belonging for children today. Children who perhaps may not even know who one parent is as opposed to another. Children who are shuttled back and forth between families or maybe even between foster homes. not really belonging and having a sense of true identity? And how can we help them have that sense of belonging as Christians? Thinking back to the fact that that infant was identified with a name that caused suffering for his family. Consider the cross again. Christ on Calvary, betrayed, abandoned, stripped of what he owned, and made poor by the forces of evil, by the forces of oppression, and the forces of domination. And then look to the manger. The infant in Bethlehem, a refugee displaced and made poor by politics of Herod, by selfishness of Herod, and by the culture. They weren't rich. They gave the poorer sacrifice allowed by the law. And then they were refugees. They had to pick up and run because of selfishness and politics and culture. And when we think about that, think about the children in our world, children in our country, maybe even children in Piedmont. Abandoned, abused. This is my term, living on the streets, physically, emotionally, and spiritually. You know, there's some kids that live on the streets physically, but there are others that pretty much their living on the streets is an emotional thing. They may be in a house, but their emotions live on the streets. Their spirits live on the streets. And who are in need of safety and security. Jesus' parents took him away as refugees to safety, sought to give him security in an unsecure world and an insecure world. But what about the children that we see? Children, I understand that there are more and more children every month, even in the United States, that end up being homeless, going to school, and who knows? Sometimes there are signs, sometimes there aren't. But who knows? And they're in need of safety, they're in need of security. Consider Christ crucified outside the city walls on a cross as Mary stood by powerless and helpless to change it. And yet, as an infant, that man was born as an infant outside his own village, which was Nazareth. Crowded out of the inn in Bethlehem, born in the stable as Mary and Joseph knelt by a manger. So, see, he didn't really start his life off so idyllic after all as we paint the pictures, because there was uncertainty there. Born outside the walls, crucified outside the walls. And then consider children who are excluded from safety and housing, safe daycare, safety in schools. We've been reminded of that far too much in the last few years. Safety on playgrounds. Those who get snatched up, or those who get snatched up because somebody comes along and says, "Here, try this." And who might be on the fringes of society. And who knows, they may be living in a car or in a shelter or under the bridge with desperate parents who want to give them safety and security, but like Mary and Joseph, are faced with difficult choices in those early years. What about education? Consider the cross. Christ is questioned by the chief priests in Sanhedrin about his teachings and about his disciples. Where'd you get all this stuff? How dare you say these things? And then he's crucified. From the manger, this baby, this infant, grows into a boy, and we find the boy Jesus in Jerusalem, sitting among the teachers in the temple, continuing to learn the things that he had been taught by his father and his mother and others. And today we have many children without the same access to the same educational opportunities as other people do. How are they going to learn, and how are they going to improve, and how are they going to grow? Some go outside. Some rise up in spite of the circumstances. in spite of the situations. But how many others do we find slipping through the cracks, falling by the wayside, when sometimes we have opportunities to help make a difference? Consider the world in which Jesus found himself. Christ on Calvary was tortured and held as a helpless captive while observed by witnesses, many of them hostile and mocking him. From the manger we have an infant, a dependent newborn who's visited by shepherds, by foreign royalty, but then is threatened by Herod. Now what about children today? I know we can't provide it in every instance. But which one of us really would say that children today are not entitled to be raised in an atmosphere of peace with dignity and freedom to become their best? However, we do know many of them find indignity and cruelty and injustice, some even at the hands of adults in whose care they're placed. And we can't necessarily change that for all of them. But I guess the question out of this is, how many times do we find ourselves not wanting to get involved? We're the witnesses who turn their back, who say, well, you know, if I say something, I might get sued. Or people might talk about me, or I can't really afford the time. Doesn't mean we have to save everyone. But what about the one that we see and we have an opportunity and we step out and help? Guider says, the suffering of the infant Christ, and indeed the suffering of every child, reminds us that God also assumed this condition, infant and childhood, with the threat of suffering. And it is in this condition that God entrusted His very self to our care, that is, to humans, to our protection, and to loving service. In doing so, God dignified and sanctified the dependent interdependency of our human condition. And so before we think about the idyllic scene, and then later at Easter we think about the good news of the death on a cross and Jesus' sacrifice for us, maybe we need to think about the first part of that good news, that God chose to come in the shadows as a babe, fragile, vulnerable, to live even as those who are on the margins today sometimes live, without peace, with cruelty and with injustice, as Herod the Great sought to kill him even as a child. As others perhaps sought to influence him when he was a child growing up to do things that were wrong. Even as a young man later on, I say young man, 30-ish, but when you're my age, when the temptation didn't stop, and when he was vulnerable in the wilderness and was tempted just like a child to give in to selfishness. The shadow of the cross, I think, can take on even more meaning when we recognize the choice that was made to come in the manger and to live through that. Limited in some ways so that it could be said not only of the child but of the man, tempted in every way just like we are, but without committing sin. It's a tall order to look at the suffering around. And how many of us, I've been guilty, say, well, you know, there's not really a whole lot I can do about that. I've got to worry about this and this and this. And when I read this essay some time back, it just kind of... And yeah, the first one I want to protect is that little 4.5-year-old. But also kind of hit me that there are more out there than just her. That don't have somebody to speak up for them. And therein is the rub for me. When do I speak and when do I not? And how do I show? When you do this unto the least, I was hungry, and you gave me something to eat, even though I wasn't but 4 years old. I was thirsty, you gave me something to drink. I was 10. I didn't have very good clothes, but you helped me out. And even though they might not have been new, you gave me something that was nicer than what I had. When you did it to the least, not just the least of the adults, but those who oftentimes society sees as more expendable, you did it to me. Less talk tonight than usual. That's okay, because it is kind of a shadowy subject, one that we don't want to see it on the news, and when we hear it, we flip the channels, or we get like this for the first go round, and then we turn it to something else. I'm reminded of the song, I won't sing it, but I'm reminded of the song, Blood, Sweat, and Tears, saying, God bless the child. Yes, Debbie. Right. Yeah, we do have Eli stories. And she's not... Well, I don't know. She might be talking about her husband, but... Yeah, so Eli said he liked that attention that you were giving him, and if he could be bad again. Yeah. But he was craving that affection and that care. Yeah. Yeah. Well, it's kind of like we talked Romans 6 the other week. Said Paul says, well, if we're gonna have, if grace is gonna abound where there's sin, why don't we just keep sinning and sinning and sinning? He said, no, that doesn't work that way. I had that discussion with my younger son the other night via a whole bunch of texts, because he was reading a book that talked about grace and said it's not really grace if you got to do something to earn it. And we talked about back and forth about grace and that kind of thing. And Romans 6, I eventually tossed out at him, and he said, I love debating, with a little smiley face, but it was a question about why do we show grace and why do we give grace and why do we want grace, and is it really unconditional if we got to do something to earn it? And I said, well, you don't really earn it. Yeah, but grace, would God give grace to an atheist? I said, well, that's a pretty good question, but grace means that I'm willing to forgive and I'm ready to forgive, and I will offer you grace even if I don't necessarily agree and you've done something wrong, because I want you to be the best you can be. I don't want to offer you the best that I can. So yes, grace can be there without strings attached. I think, of course, he looked at it. Eli looked at you. He was bad and you, that's it, I'm taking you over here. And you gave him that attention with the coloring and the Bible stories and all that kind of stuff. He looked at it as, okay, now I can buy my way by doing something bad again next week. But we have so many children, and probably a lot of adults, that are still children at heart, because they've never fully grown up, because they haven't had that attention and that affection and that care. And the cycle has to stop somewhere for each one. can only stop one at a time, oftentimes, but that's where that individual attention and that care and affection. It's on the front page. It says, D, the infant Christ was in need of affection and protection. Yeah, it's the same need of every child. But yes, Connie. Yes, you may. Care and affection is a universal kind of thing. And it's one person at a time. You can't do it 30 at a time. But we throw them in the classroom and expect the teacher to. And who knows, maybe some of those teachers that get in do crazy things needed to have some kind of other guidance and sense of care and affection when they were growing up. Well, that will end. God bless you. Go in peace. And it's. I've already got you to 2 minutes till 7. The choir's got to run across the way. Thank you. Amen.